This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Shinying, for the news. This is Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Audrey Raj. I'm in the studio today with
Frida Liu,
Arvini Raj.
And we are about to kick off this Friday Biz Bites with a bit of talk about food.
Food Fridays.
Is that something we should try and implement?
Maybe.
Fun Fridays, fun food Fridays.
Sounds delicious.
Yes, it does. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us at any point, you can reach us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Also on Twitter and on Insta Story at BFM Radio. It's all about food this Friday afternoon. But we're also talking a bit about WeWork's upcoming IPO in September. They seem to be missing something very important from their IPO filing. Frida will be telling us a bit about that. Yeah. And also, you know, a teenager in the States has found a cool way to tweet after her mom confiscated her phone. More details on that. It's a really fun story. Stay tuned for that at the end of the show. But first, our main story of the day, food, Arvin.
Yeah, so sometimes we don't think about what kinds of regulations surround different kinds of businesses, right? Because like restaurants, they go through like certification processes and inspections to make sure that they are hygienic. If it's not up to standard, then they are either closed down or they're fine. Ideally, they're, you know, closed down or fine. One of our colleagues found something special in their like chap fun last week, and that restaurant is still open. So we don't know how much these regulations still
very special.
Six legs and special, but you know, so they're still open, they're still selling. So we don't know how much these regulations actually work, and we don't actually think about if these regulations extend to home cooks as well. So people who make food out of their own kitchens. Obviously, a lot of people make money from small businesses that are run from their homes. It empowers like stay-home moms, single moms, single parents, part-timers, freelancers. And we have we ourselves have like special food items from certain delivery places that we get that are prepared in people's kitchens and homes that we do sometimes on like a regular basis. So there are a lot of benefits of running food businesses from homes. Some of the numbers based in the US, not here, but it gives you an idea of how important home cooks are. In 2008, businesses made from home cooks amounted to $5 billion. This year, it has it's estimated to reach about $20 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. So there is a positive impact on the economy when you allow people to be independent and creative and make money without having to worry about things like rent, big infrastructure, you know, paying too much to sort of operate their businesses, and if they can just do it freely at home. Speaking about the US, though, there's an article in the New York Times that highlights something very interesting. It says that New Jersey is the only state or the only sort of district where it is illegal to sell homemade foods for profit. If you sell them, you could be fined up to $1,000. So every other state has dropped such restrictions. New Jersey's regulations are based on something from 1906, but it was implemented because of hygiene and safety. The government didn't know if cooking out of your own kitchen was a health hazard, so they said that you are not allowed to, and you're not allowed to make money off of it. So even if you are a home cook or like a home chef, you can bake and you can sell your goods, but you have to donate them either to...
It's like a charity, like a food fair kind of thing, you know, like the school, the mom's doing it for their
kids.
Bake sales and stuff.
Right. But free bake sales.
Free bake sales, or you have to donate to the bake sales. So it's like a pay how much you want kind of thing. You cannot make it into a legit business. So obviously this rule in New Jersey sort of removes opportunities for people who make a living and provide for their families. They're not able to do that on the side. But at the same time, you cannot discount some of the reasons why the rules were there in the first place. You know, like, how do we know someone's kitchen is clean? How do we know what it looks like? How do we know where the food is coming from? And if you don't have those regulations, then you sort of give people like free rein to not care about those things on their side.
Yeah. Right.
As long as the packaging, when it comes to you, it looks clean and, you know,
acceptable
and stuff. So in other US states, home cooks have to get a license and are only allowed to make a certain amount per year from their kitchens. Otherwise, it becomes a full-blown business, not a home-based one.
Right.
So then it falls into like different tax brackets and stuff. In other states, you also have to have inspections and certifications and treat the business as side hustle, not something that's making you like millions every year. And I think locally, when you get food from, like here in Malaysia, Malaysia, I think when you get food from like petrol stations and stuff, I think those have to go through certain kinds of processes, but I'm not sure. I don't think you can just, you know,
be get, a supplier to
to like big petrol chains and stuff. So they have their process,
their vendor
process and stuff. So I guess that brings around to the question, you know, should home cooks have to follow like stricter rules? Do they need like more, do they need like certification?
I got a lot to say about this. You know, I catered dinner, right, for 5 years, you know. So I mean, for you know, so this was my dinner for 5 years. Food's good, never had any stomach pains, everything. But I also, I know like in Singapore, there's definitely not, it's against the law if you were to, you know, make a business out of it, you have to declare that you're operating from home. And I know that where we are at the moment, when we talk about being a developed nation status, right, getting to that state, we need standards, we need that sort of thing, right? But because of all these things, right, would I get the food at that price? You know, so I know, so because, you know, if they're okay, the food's pretty good, I start telling my friends, so and that's the price factor, right? Whether the person pays tax, I don't know. Right, I don't know. So that's how, that's why these sort of things have sort of sprouted out and everything. I mean, even the whole idea of food trucks, right? Suddenly, when the food trucks first came, right, they were talking about working with the authorities, the DBKL, the MPBJ. They didn't know what to do. Okay, they didn't know what to do. They try to find them, but they don't know how to find them on what law, right? On what basis, right? So I remember in the early days of the food truck industry, they were facing a couple of issues. But you know, like outside the construction sites, that's a food truck. It's been happening for years, but because it wasn't fancy in Changi, right, nobody made any noise. But then suddenly you had the fancy food trucks, there were certain laws and there were certain illegalities.
Like the sugarcane uncle in the Pasar Malam, he works out of a truck. But then, you know, when all these food trucks became a bit of a, became fashionable, like just say a couple, like maybe 5 years ago, all of a sudden they found that there wasn't a class of license that they could apply for because they were a moving food business and it was not the same as like if you park your truck at a Pasar Malam. So they were like different, a different license that didn't really exist in Malaysia just yet for food trucks.
Right. But that's the thing. If they had the license, if there was like a food truck license, would the sugarcane uncle or the soybean uncle or the taufufa sellers been able to make a business? I mean, we've been so like normalized with it. We don't think about it. It's part, we've had food trucks before food trucks were hipster and cool. Would we have had all those things if there were like regulations?
Well, there haven't been big cases of food poisoning, right? The food poisoning stories we've heard have always been in restaurants or in schools.
Maybe that's just because it's become normalized for us. You know, if we get food poisoning from an auntie that just set up a stall in front of her house or something like that, we'll like, oh, you know, it's just the auntie, and you don't take action because it's so normalized. Right. Like I was telling Arvin yesterday when we were discussing the story outside the studio, I said like in the States, if you get a bout of food poisoning, you could actually sue the restaurant or the business owner because...
Or even individuals.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. But here it's just like you purge and you get on with life. You know,
I mean, we have
Malaysia boleh. You know,
I think that's why it's different here because we have like iron stomachs. Like you said, you know, it's like you eat something, there's always a 50% chance you're gonna get food poisoning when you go to the mama or anywhere. We're like, okay, if it's nice, you get food poisoning, you know, take MC back to work the next day. You know, no one cares.
Cast iron bellies.
Cast iron bellies. We're so used to it, but so we don't actually think about, you know, if we should put these rules on homemakers. And also because we are sort of like in a place where, you know, they are making side hustle. It is a source of income and it helps them out. So why sort of, you know, bother them with all these, you know, processes and make them jump through hoops and stuff?
Hygiene factor. I mean, I just want to bring up as well, like Picha Eats, right? Picha Eats works with, and these cooks are working from home, right, by law. So they're working from home, but what they do is they go and make sure that there's hygiene. They all have their, shots. I think it's TB shots or what. So they make sure that all these things are taken care of because they deal a lot with water and all that. So they are they have practices in place, right, to ensure that the cooks are clean and all that. So
we actually have Minchia, who's the community builder at Picha Eats. She'll be giving us some insight later on. But yeah, you were right. So they go through, you know, certain kinds of
you, Minchia.
They have like certain kinds of homegrown or in-home processes that they apply to their cooks. But if you're an individual, if you're just like a single person cooking, or maybe you have like a partner and you're cooking from home, would you make sure your kitchen is clean? Like if no one sees how dirty your kitchen is, Do you care? You know?
Define clean.
Yeah, we spoke about
define
packaging.
Define dirty.
Right? For here, it's very like fluid, especially like in Malaysia. But we spoke about packaging yesterday and how you can package something and sell it. And as long as the cover and the box is nice, you'll buy it. So maybe just focus on the you know, the box, and if it's clean and hygienic, you know, who cares what? Yeah, it has to be clean.
Who cares? Do you care? We'd like to know what you have to say about this. Does Malaysia need more regulations when it comes to home-cooked food businesses? Get in touch with us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Also on Twitter and on InstaStory at BFM Radio. We'll come back with some of your feedback. Some interesting stuff has come through in just a bit. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Be free, Malaysians. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with Audrey Arvin and Frida, and we are talking about keeping home-cooked kitchens in check. So in the state of New Jersey in the States, it is illegal for you to make profit out of a home-based food business.
Yeah.
So even if you're just baking cakes, you know, and trying to make it's a bit of a side hustle, a big no-no, you can be fined up to $1,000 US, right?
Yeah.
So what we're talking about is, do you think Malaysia needs more regulations for home-cooked food businesses? Get in touch with us, 018-789-8899, or on Twitter and on InstaStory at BFM Radio. Arv, what do we have on Twitter?
Yeah, so this comes from Kapilan, who says, regulating is okay, just don't make it difficult. No one likes regulations. Imagine if we don't, we all will be making our own rules and there will be no control measures. Searching says, agreed, but there will be those who complain that even standard regulations are difficult to go through. I'm not speaking from experience. Even in an ideal Malaysia of no corruption, some older folks just hate dealing with civil servants. And then Yun Chen says, yes.
Oh, okay. Just yes.
Just
all
yes.
Right. Okay.
Just yes.
So on Instagram, we have Gwen O say, so far no issues with food poisoning, but I would like to see some regulation, yes. And then this fella, the name Richard Bradbury. Do we know him?
Much sounds familiar.
Okay. As much as I love the food delivery services, some kind of regulation wouldn't be a bad thing. And, you know, I just want to, you know, comment on what they said, right? It's this whole complication of getting your documents and this is something that I absolutely detest, because they don't seem to be like certain standards. These three forms. And then suddenly you say, no, you have to go to this department. You have to go. How many times have we heard these stories, right? So if it's very clear, these are the three things you need to do, or five things you need to do, and this is it. You come to this department, fine, right? It's just that when we're going through all these hoops and loops and what have you, it's like, that's why people don't want you know, to go by the book.
To do any
and
of
then
this.
Sometimes when you go to this department, they tell you you're not at the right cawangan.
Yes.
And then,
you know, and then go to another cawangan, and you go to the third cawangan, and you finally don't get your forms.
Yeah, you go home.
Exactly. I know we were also talking about food trucks earlier. We've got a text in from Victor who says, you know, food trucks, there was initially the issue of how to insure the food truck, etc. So challenges of getting loans for them as well. Mm-hmm. Good point, right? There's another one here by Muhammad Tani who says, home food catering, I see the guys at the Mama mopping the floor as I make my order. He attends to my order without washing. Home catering services should be required to undergo food handling training to ensure appreciation of food safety by all involved in the food supply businesses, even home-based.
See, that's the thing. When we go to the Mama, when we see them, the Mama shops and all, we see them doing that in front of us, which is what I said. You know, they mop the floors and they're cleaning, but then the Maggie is so nice and you don't care.
And
you
know, normalized. Right. This is something that normalized. We've seen since we were kids. You know, we've been going to Mama for years, and that's the kind of thing. But not just Mama. It's a certain like hawker centers
hawker
and
centers,
like some restaurants as well. They're very laxed,
right? And we're thinking like that's why the food is good.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what's that thing? Like, five rats, food must be good.
And we make
they're
fun
there
of,
too.
We make fun of hotel food. Like, when you say that, oh, they're serving kway teow in like a hotel, we're like, yeah, I don't want that. It's too clean. You know, like, where's the yesterday's oil and last week's grease and stuff? But we actually spoke to Minchia, who's the community builder at Picha Eats, and asked her to give her insight. And we asked her, how do they regulate the hygiene level of the home cook's kitchen and food?
So in Picha Eats, firstly, we make sure that all our Picha chefs, they went through the food handler course, and then they all will get the certificate. Through the course, they will learn about the basic hygiene and on the knowledge and on how can they practice it at home. we make sure that there will be a kitchen check every single week from our side. So we will make sure that there is quality control, no matter it's on the food or on the hygiene itself. We are also trying to work with external audit team in order to come in the kitchen and then also be at the kitchen when they have orders so that we can see how the kitchen practice is like.
We also asked how they navigate quality control for the ingredients that are used in the food.
So we make sure that they don't buy from a random store. Everything has to come with a receipt. It has to come from supermarket, and that also brings the Muslim friendly part. We make sure that either they come from NSK, Giant, or Tesco hypermarket like this. Even though some of the ingredients that couldn't be found because they use a lot of Arabic herbs. So in that case, they will go purchase the items from Arabic market, but everything should come with a receipt.
We asked Mincia how they ensure consistency when it comes to the quality and taste of the finished dishes.
To a certain extent, we will control the volume that the kitchen get per day. Of course, at the first, we will test it out how much they can handle in terms of the skill, in terms of the equipment, in terms of how big their kitchen is. So that we make sure this fits the capacity that they are having right now. So we control the volume in a way where if it's a big order, we will split the kitchen and make sure that they don't take more than what they are capable of. And then from our end, we will standardize the recipe in a way where even though they are cooking from different kitchens, but as long as they eat the same item, then they should use the same amount of ingredients. Even the variety of the rice, it should be the same, and the variety of vegetables that's found in a salad, that it has to be the same as it.
If I'm buying from a home-cooked food business, I never expect the taste to kind of be the same the next day or next order. So, I guess, this is something that Picha has actually really, thought about.
Trying to ensure
there's consistency in taste and standards and... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we were not so sure, we also asked if there are existing home-cooked food delivery standards or guidelines in place by governing bodies.
Currently, there is no governing body, whether it's public or private, that's doing that. But what we do is refer back to the food regulations from Minister of Health, and then we make sure that we tailor it to a home-based setting. So, for example, certain things that will not change. It's like the personal hygiene, you have to use gloves and wear an apron, things like that. And then when it comes to how often the kitchen has to be cleaned, we will tailor it according to home setting.
And finally, we wanted to know if there were government-imposed regulations, does Mincia think that would be helpful or harmful for home-cooked food businesses?
I think it's actually a good initiative because now that people, even though people know that the food comes from a home kitchen. So, of course, we also make sure that we are up to that standard. At least people wouldn't have this perception, home cooked is not standardized. Or like home cooked means it's being done in a, agak-agak way. But instead, there is a regulation being placed in all the kitchens, even though it's a home cooked food. And yeah, I guess it's positive in a way where public would set a different perspective on the kitchens, and they know that they can trust the kitchen.
That was Mincia, community builder at Picha Eats. So I'm just thinking about it. I am a huge proponent of buying from small businesses. If I know that you're working out of your own home,
yes.
I'm thinking about the kind of people who have no choice. They have to be at home and they're just trying to, they're making this their side hustle, right? Something that they do just, to a little bit of extra money. So I always try and support that, right?
Okay.
But and as much as I would like for these standards to be put in place, I also worry about them just... You know what it's like here in Malaysia? Like when once you even if it's just one hoop that they have to jump through, half of them are just not going to do it anymore. I mean, look what happened with Grab and PSV. When they suddenly said there's going to be regulations, you have to go for tests, go to get JPJ involved and things like that. All of a sudden, 3/4 of the drivers just refused to go for the tests.
Just dropped out.
And what happened to the consumer choice then?
You see, when we start talking about these rules, right? Just think about it. You go to a food market, sometimes, you know, like whenever weekend fairs and all that, there's food. We don't know, do they come with regulations? I would like to see some standards, but I don't want it to be difficult for people to apply and get themselves. I mean, simple things like that, right? You're saying that they have their shots, that they have all these sort of things. I do want to, but you don't want to kill your spirit as well. So there's food markets. We never question where the brownie came from, and then we support it because it's for charity and that sort of thing. Or even supper clubs, you know, I've been to one of these supper clubs where they just cook from home. You don't know what the food is. You pay a certain amount of money. They tell you where you live. And then they just do it on Saturdays and a whole bunch of people come in and eat from someone's home, right? Again, right? Do they have a whatever? I don't know. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like I'll go. But I would like to start questioning these things, right? You know, is it halal, is it whatever, right?
Especially if they're doing it for like a certain cause, like they're raising money for something. Like a lot of them who come to like food markets and stuff, they are doing it for maybe someone who needs medical attention, or they are doing it for a charity. And if you put too many regulations on them and you get them to like you said, like jump through hoops, they don't have time for that. Like, you know, how long are they going to wait before they can sell these things? You know, there's an urgent matter that needs addressing. They are raising money for that thing, and if you're going to take 6 months to give them a license, then what is the point? It defeats the purpose.
Also, then it comes down to enforcement. And you know what it's like here when it comes to enforcement? Are we going to have spot checks like in your home? And you know, what if like on that day your kitchen is closed or you didn't get any orders, and then they come to do a spot check? Will we actually follow through with the enforcement? So that's another thing.
Like I said, the six-legged friend in the chop fund, I mean, that guy's still there. So I don't think enforcement actually works that well. We've seen like in the beginning, there were like few restaurants that shut down, and they were, you know, putting that yellow tape and saying that because they were dirty and they found rats. I don't see restaurants closing down anymore, and I know some restaurants should be, but you know, so yeah, like you said, enforcement is not strict. So either enforce it and then put a proper license on them without making it difficult, or if you're not going to enforce and it's going to be difficult, then you know, just leave
let
them alone.
Let it be.
Let it be.
Right. Okay. Tell us what you think. Get in touch with us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Also on Twitter and on Insta Story at BFM Radio. We've got a whole bunch of messages to go through, but we'll do that right after a little bit of the Jackson 5 Dancing Machine on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.